Well, thanks, Frank.
I got 7 o'clock on my watch, so. We ready to get going, everybody? Okay, reminder to the public that this meeting is being recorded. Is there any public comment on matters not on the agenda? Is that you, Michael?
No.
Okay, you're just getting up. Okay. All right, consent agenda. Is there anything any trustee would like pulled from the consent agenda? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve it.
Motion to approve consent agenda.
Second.
Walt?
Aye.
Ken?
Yes.
Justin?
Yes.
Pete?
Yes. Okay, first agenda item, introduction of Assistant Chief Chris Dahlhauser, pronounced correctly?
Correct.
Hi, Chris.
Hey, how are you?
Yeah, after our strenuous research and interviewing, and we found Chris and hired him on. Walt helped out greatly with our hiring committee, and Ken helped also. And Chris started on the 26th. Comes to us from Central Valley and Boise and the Forest Service and the DNRC. And he's been a great fit. The guys have really enjoyed having him around so far, and we are getting him up to speed.
Excellent.
It's been a pretty smooth transition since he was right across the valley, so we're not starting from ground zero or anything. So.
Nice.
Welcome aboard.
Remind me again, 20, how many years?
21.
21?
Yeah.
Involved in this type of work.
Correct.
Yeah.
Excellent. It might be smooth, but it feels like I'm drinking water through a fire hose.
Well, we want to keep you on your toes.
Well, we'll just try to stay your way, Chris. That's sort of our MO. Low drama. Don't muck it up.
Right.
That's our job.
Right.
Any more board discussion?
I'll just have to say a little interaction when we worked on our budget. Chris was involved in that, and so doing some final budget, he's jumping right in. So.
Would you have around how my kid is driving soon?
Any public comment on a regular agenda item number one? Okay, Max Mills, walk the one up.
Sure.
Do this one?
Do the paperwork for that.
I got it right here.
Yeah, as usual, unless there's any thoughts in a different direction, the board has typically requested that Max Mills be approved by the county for the district, and I don't see any reason why we shouldn't be going after Max Mills. And the impact of that, Max Mills would result in almost $1.5 million level of taxes. And so I think that's pretty straightforward.
Ken, this is the first time you've probably been through this. Do you have questions about this process or what we're doing when we talk about levying Max Mills?
Yeah, no, I don't understand it. However, I'm going to get involved in a little bit with the last piece of mail we got from the county.
Your property tax bill, or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's doubled in 2 years, and I don't get it, so.
Well, we don't have to levy the maximum mills that we're entitled to. We have that discretion. And we've been doing that. We have been levying max mills ever since I've been a board member, mostly because we're trying to catch up on capital replacement funds. So it's that sort of pay me now, pay me later thing. So if we give money back to the taxpayers in terms of tax rebate, we run the risk of having to go out for mill levies to pay for capital expenses. And if we just kept those mills at the max level, we just keep chipping away to our capital reserve funds.
Yeah, and to add to that, I guess one possibility, we could move this discussion down closer to final budget discussion, or if you wanted me to jump into some of that now, we could talk about a little bit in terms of why Max Mills is probably a good idea as Pete mentioned, you know, we can, it's a situation where it's pay me now, pay me later. And one of the, in my time serving on the Ray Fire Service Area Board, and now with Highlight, and I've seen how Sourdough, you know, how they operated prior to our consolidation. And it's been the objective, I felt, of all of those boards to try and, as much as possible, smooth out the taxes that that constituents have to pay, and do it in a manner that's, you know, responsible to our the constituents and maintains our budget, both from an operational sense and from a capital replacement sense. And I think as we get further down into this discussion with final budget, I think it'll become a little bit clearer as to why. You know, the capital budget component, it takes about the annualized amount, and I know Brian and Chris are going to be reworking the capital replacement plan, but a year or so ago when we looked at it, the annualized amount that is required to meet the capital budget or capital replacement plan as it was then constructed took about $400,000 to meet it on an annualized basis. And obviously it's very lumpy because, you know, one year we may be buying, you know, some SCBAs or radios or something, another year we're buying a $600,000 engine. And so it's kind of lumpy in the time path, but the annualized amount's about $400,000. And then, you know, that's going to be reworked now. And so we'll probably come up with a new number here in the near future. But if you take that into consideration, along with the cost, the operational cost, the annual operating cost to keep everything going, you know, everything from utilities to fuel and repairs and so on. You know, our current budget right now is right at, and personnel, we're right at nearly $1 million. Can you go to the first, the internal budget? So if you look, I don't know if I'm, is this, or AP, do you want to maintain this or?
Let's do the budget discussion as part of this. We'll just move item five up. Okay. And talk about all at the same time.
Sure. So some of this might be a little bit redundant. We can elaborate at any point in time. But if you look at the spreadsheet, the amount of, if you can scroll down to just the total. Operational costs, just up just a little bit right in there. So for FY22, there, if you look at the total expenses for operations, we're just a little over $1 million, $1,058,000, and is the operations budget for FY22. And if you combine that, and there's going to be a further, we've approved a couple of capital replacement items, and Brian has a couple of other items that he'd like to add to that list. And so that whole list in its entirety results in about a $334,000 capital outlay this year. And so if you look at those numbers, plus we have a bond payment of about $222,000 just above that. So those items combined, about $1.6 million. And if you go up at total income, we're, so the taxes, both bond, mill, and the taxes for operations, plus the earnings that we receive on investments, and then we also get an on-behalf payment from the state and for FERS, and then a couple of other things. That total revenue stream is about $1,855,000. And so if we take away the $1,614,000 from that, you've got a little over, you know, around $240,000 left over that's being contributed to capital replacement for the future. And obviously, like I said, you know, that's lumpy. And so that, it's not a, you know, we're not being extravagant by any stretch of the imagination. I'm kind of like you, I look at my tax bill and I think, is there a way that we can reduce costs? And given the world that we're operating in, just the small part of what we see in our taxes, you know, that we have an influence over, you know, I asked that question myself. And if we want to be in a position to provide the level of service that Highlight Rural Fire District can provide to our constituents, the way we have to do that is maintaining that revenue stream in order to, you know, maintain capital replacement going into the future and so on. The alternative is, you know, it's a bigger question that do the, you know, constituents, do they want to look at, you know, service, a lower level of service? And, you know, for the most part, when you talk to people, there aren't too many people that want to see lower level of service. You know, we're on par with the Bozeman Municipal and Central Valley and so on in terms of our response times and our capabilities and so on. And I don't know that there are too many people that would like to see us lessen our service capabilities, which would happen if we didn't maintain our capital items and didn't maintain our personnel and our ability to meet all of our operations costs, you know, for training and so on. So I guess that's the argument for Max Mills, is having that capacity to meet our annual operations expenses and future capital replacement requirements.
It, correct me if I'm wrong, but when we merged, we lowered our mills to keep it so our revenue was neutral, because otherwise we would have gotten more revenue, but we just wanted to keep the same amount of money we're getting from both sides.
Right, yeah.
So when we first made Highlight out of the two different Ray and Sourdough, we lowered our mills, which lowered taxes, just to keep our revenue the same that we were getting from both sides. So when we talk about max mills, we're just keep, what's it like, 5 point something, or?
The number of mills?
Yeah.
So when
we created the district, we said, this is how we're gonna operate at these mills. And so we're just keeping the number the same year over year. So you're gonna continue to pay 200 grand or something per, for every 200 grand, how much was the amount of mills?
The total number of mills that Max Mills is 47.04, not including.
But what was the thing for every $200,000 house value? It was like,
you know, I don't recall
50
that.
Bucks or something?
I don't recall that number right off the top of my head. Yeah, I don't recall that number. But 47 of the mills, when you look at your tax bill, and I think we're around 400 mills altogether with everybody somewhere in that neighborhood, 400 and some mills. 47 of those mills, 47.04 go to operations, and then 8.59 currently go to the bond. So about 55 mills roughly.
So we're just keeping our mills the same year over year over year.
Yeah.
And the only way that we're getting a raise basically is by every new house that gets built in the district.
Right, valuation.
So rather than going up and down, you know, one year you pay $200, the next year you pay $100, rather than doing that, we just keep it the same.
Right, so if you go to the top line, if you scroll to the top revenue line, so if you look at FY 21 compared to FY 22, it's about $170,000 change, and that's mostly a result of the new houses and stuff, in, you know, increased valuation in the district. That increase, it's about $170,000, so about 11% increase, which I don't know that I would enter that into my spreadsheet as an expectation. I think that's pretty strong. You know, it's obviously a function of fairly significant growth and increases in valuation. You know, probably more realistic, even with our strong growth, would be somewhere in that 6 to 7%. I don't know. Chris and Brian and I talked about that. I think we're gonna try and look back at, you know, 5-6 years and mm-hmm. look at a year to year, kind of an average annualized rate of increase in our taxes over the last 5-6 years.
So we've been fortunate almost every year for 20 years our mills, well, we did have a mill levy increase, but since we made that mill levy increase, mills haven't moved, but the value we get from those mills has increased steadily every single year because of property values, we don't know.
Right, so the bond millage actually goes down because, you know, it's a fixed payment, you know, the payment schedule has been determined already for those bonds. Mm-hmm. And with valuation, with increased valuation, it takes fewer mills to service that debt. So that component actually goes down. I think originally with sourdough, you were around 15 or 16 when it was just the sourdough constituents, and then of course it got spread out between sourdough and Ray, and then it's also declined year to year after that because of increases in valuation within the district. And so it doesn't take as many mills to service that debt. And with our refinancing, we've even improved upon that a little bit.
And if Ken wanted to go down to the county and talk to somebody about this, who's the person who would?
Yeah, well, if you can get a hold of her, you know, Justine Swanson is the one, the most knowledgeable one on a lot of that. And then the county treasurer's office, too. County finance and county treasurer. Yeah. The ones that can kind of explain the millage stuff.
No, there's some third-party explanations on the internet that try to explain, you know, they give not a real detail, but
right, you know,
they let me know it's complicated and involves a lot of stuff.
In Montana now we have every two years we have a reappraisal. And so all of these calculations are based on that reappraisal. And then they try to equalize things a little bit because you have these big growth rates. And actually I saw there's a proposal now to fix, and I don't know how much traction it's gonna gain, you know, for people that are in their homes to kind of fix property taxes, but I don't know if that's gonna gain much traction. But it's all based on that valuation, that two-year appraisal process.
So back in around 07, 08, in other parts of the nation, we had a devaluation where, you know, the property values went down and the assessors had to back off, and it took a number of years to catch back up again. Mm-hmm. Did that happen here?
You know, I don't know. In 2000, when the Great Recession, so-called Great Recession, occurred in 2008, you know, it affected the Gallatin Valley, but not to the extent that it affected, you know, areas like Las Vegas and other parts of the country that were severely in Florida, you know, that were severely impacted by the downward adjustment in home prices when the whole thing crashed. And that did occur in the Gallatin, and I don't recall right off if we had much of an impact on our tax calculation.
I don't think it moved. No. The interesting thing about the Gallatin Valley is anytime something bad like that happens nationally, more people come here. So we had actually support for the housing prices. People who got burned were developers who were leveraged, right? But by 2010, we were way ahead of the rest.
Yeah, it recovered. We had a small
public. Did the assessment or the receivable go down to the fire department? Do you know? Or
no.
I don't
say about the same. They worked their way through it?
Yeah, I don't think we had a negative impact.
No, budget-wise, we really didn't see an impact at all from it.
Yeah, we wouldn't have had a big growth, but I think it at least would maintain status quo.
Anything else? Any questions?
No, I'll figure it out someday.
Yeah, it's complicated.
It takes a long time to get it understood.
Walt Wright and heard on this. So you just want to roll into the budget? We'll just move item five up.
We need to act on the resolution,
right?
Mills resolution. So I would recommend to the board that the board approve Max Mills' request for the department. That's my motion.
Second.
Any public comment on the motion? Any more board discussion on the motion? Okay.
Walt?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Justin?
Yes.
Pete?
Yes. So everybody's John Hancock needs to go on that wall so you can just sign what you're supposed to and pass it around.
I guess we can start with this one. That's the actual budget that I'll attach.
Yeah. And we'll have to see.
Should I just put absent by Jason's? Okay, so Walt, items 3, 4, and 5 are all related.
Right.
Do you have a sequence you'd like to take those in?
I think, Brian, you're going to tip title number 3.
Yep. So if you guys flip to your capital replacement sheet, which is the county capital outlay sheet. That kind of can show you what we're talking about here. So some of this has already been discussed in preliminary budget. The items that were approved at that point, we're just rolling onto here. And then we, as Walt mentioned, we have added a few items that we'd like to try to take care of some projects with. So the first item, command vehicle, which in the replacement, yes or no, yes, that is just something we just rolled over from the preliminary budget, so that's to replace one of our current command vehicles. The next item down, what I'm asking for there is to purchase an additional command vehicle item. And if you remember from my chief's report last month, we kind of talked a little bit about the funds that we received through the CARES Funding Act, which were income in last year's budget, in trying to utilize some of that money that we got reimbursed for salaries. So then we ended up with extra money technically left over in the budget for salary out of last year. So why I'm requesting that additional command vehicle is to get to the operationally for the fire department, for the fire chief and the assistant chief to have their own staff vehicles. And what I'm trying to accomplish there is be able to, which is basically to offer oversight of the fire department really at any time by the fire chief or assistant fire chief. Hugely important for our department given our age of our responders and their experience. And what I'm really trying to fix is something we've battled with for a long time of not having those vehicles assigned. Is, you know, personal vehicles being utilized on scene. And there's challenges that come with that. If it's an incident affecting a roadway, we get flag from the highway patrol that a private vehicle from the fire department is parked on scene. And it's just a risk that I don't know that we need to take of having the fire chief and assistant chief personal vehicles on scene, risking being damaged, that kind of stuff. So that's what that line item is to. So it's not replacing a current command vehicle, it would be in addition to, which would take our command vehicle fleet from 3 to 4. So that's that one. Chainsaws, that's just our rescue saws, that's from preliminary budget, that is up for replacement in this year's budget. Same thing with extrication equipment, again, that was in preliminary. The shed is what we've talked about with the Cottonwood residency program. The Cottonwood paving. Ken, do you want to talk about your quotes on that one?
Right now?
Sure. We're on that item.
So you've got in front of you the three basic quotations. Apex, Knife River, and High Country. They're very similar they're similar in the amount of gravel and stuff like that they feel like they need to bring in. So their opinions were pretty much in line with that. And Knife River was more detailed with eliminating the problem area of the south driveway. When you first enter it, you cross the crosswalk, and then we just have a low area. It's the grade, the civil engineering part of our property there. It's sunken in, it's low. And water stands in that area. And that's bad for asphalt, obviously. And so they were adding in, diverting that water, you know, into the
ditch or whatever.
Yeah, the ditch, yeah, out front. And so that, so they had some extra. That's the one thing that's different that the other two don't have, is that extra bit of work having the ditch. The new culvert thing. It's really strange the way the county built Cottonwood, and that I guess they made some changes in the drainage ditch when they put the sidewalk in. And for some reason, they did it on the residence next door to us. They did it on ours, but so the drainage ditch is to the west, or to the east of the road, and then east of that is the sidewalk. Well, where we cross over the drainage ditch, they actually angled it and diverted it over to under the sidewalk, and then across, and then back, angle it over into the ditch. Instead of a straight run, there's three different pieces of material in there that they got going kind of crazy. But they would cut across that and then fill it in for our trucks. And our next door neighbor did that too. They cut out a little bit of the sidewalk there and then just paved it straight through. And that, because we don't know how, you know, the sidewalk, how much that's going to really hold and handle and stuff, so. But, so Knife River's got the most work in there for their proposal.
And when you were meeting with these guys, did you have any preference, any feel for?
I didn't get to meet with the Apex guy. I never met with him.
Yeah.
That was, Brian did. Tom had obviously Tom at Knife River probably had more experience than the other fellow.
Do you know, Ken, why on the knife, why they only have a 3-inch compact for the pavement?
I talked to him about that. It's a 4-inch pour, and it's 3 inches net after. It's 4 inches of asphalt. Once it's compacted and everything, it's 3 inches.
Oh, okay.
And I asked him about that, and they felt it was, that's how their yard is at their shop, is a net 3 inches after they're done. A lot of people, like, we talked about my driveway at home, that's where they start at 3 inches and they compact to 2.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're going to start at 4 and compact to 3. These other guys, Apex, came back to us, and so he was going to do 2 3-inch pours, which would net to 4 inches.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got a little bit heavier there, but it seemed like the amount of gravel that was going to be brought in was similar on both quotes, both Apex and Knife River, and I don't remember that High Country ever told us how much it was going to be.
Yeah, because Apex says 75 tons and Knife River says 125 tons.
Yeah.
So we're getting more there.
Yeah, we're getting more material.
Sounds like
we're getting more work.
That culvert work is important.
Mm-hmm. Right? It does, yeah. Yeah, I remember that the water stands on the other on the east side.
Yeah, that's just a little after effect of them installing that bike pad.
Yeah. Yeah, when the ground gets saturated, there's a lot of water that sits there.
Chief, do you have an opinion?
I don't know that, I'd like between the Knife River and the Apex, it doesn't seem like the High Country that they're talking about bringing in material. It just seems like they're grading it. So I like the idea of them bringing in material to build the base up a little more. I agree with Ken that the Knife River, addressing the drainage issues is a good thing, so we don't have further issues in the springtime and when we're got water issues going on. That my only confusion, I guess it just makes sense that they're laying asphalt just thicker than say Apex would in 2 different pours. They're just doing the same amount in one and then compacting it. So that from what I'm understanding, that the depth would be the same. It's just being done.
Well, he's using more base though too, which
right.
is more important than the asphalt in a way.
Yeah.
Asphalt's the softest part of the driveway.
And I guess, Ken, do you recall, are the warranties pretty well the same? I mean, everything's pretty well like 2 year.
No, Knife River is 1 year, and Apex and the other fellow was 2 years.
Okay.
I don't know, we're buying, I think, a 20-year lifespan product. I don't, know what 1 year versus 2 years really means.
Right. Any more board discussion?
Sounds like we're getting a great deal with Knife River.
Sure does.
Amazing price.
How about the motion?
I'll make a motion to accept Knife River's proposal.
Second. Any public discussion on the motion on the table?
Is there a timeline on these?
I'm sorry?
Is there a timeline on this?
Sorry. Everybody, we're August 15th right now. Everybody's probably booked to snow. However, this is not a very big project. It's probably 2 days of prep and 1 day of finish. But there's nobody's guaranteeing us that they'll have it in before it snows.
So
they would like to get it in and get some cold weather on it right away because it would harden up. For instance, on all this stuff that we're working on here, our fire trucks can't use that for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
We could drive on it, a few days later, but we can't put a truck on it
right
for 2 weeks. And if it's colder, you know, we get to do that a little quicker. And I guess the thing is that they find a 3-day slot somewhere where they, you know, they might get lucky and fit us in, and that's it. Otherwise, it's guaranteed by spring. But good. Or guaranteed in the spring. We don't have much of a spring here. Our spring is winter until it's not. Until it's not, yeah. Everybody's busy.
Yeah. Any more board discussion on the motion? Any more public comment on the motion? Okay, Cheryl.
Walt?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Justin?
Yes.
Pete?
Yes. Ken, thank you for getting in on this. Really appreciate it.
I had a little extra time that I could give to it. Sometimes I don't. But I thought I was putting too much on your shoulders.
Yeah, no, I greatly appreciate the help. Anytime, you know, a board member can come in with some knowledge of anything we're doing, it's great help.
Yeah, for something like this, we hope not to go have to even, put a slurry on it for 10 years or something. We shouldn't have messed much with it.
Cool. Well, that's good. That's a good price for what we have budgeted.
Yeah. Okay, Brian, back to you. We're now at two new stair chairs.
So two new stair chairs. Again, this isn't replacing capital equipment per se. So our current ambulance that we have, we actually don't have a stair chair in. Utilizing that current ambulance as a reserve unit, once our new ambulance gets here, it's equipment that we're going to need to launch our transport program. So each unit really needs its own stair chair, and that's what we're requesting on that item. And the same one, the new cot for QRU6 or for our current ambulance. So utilizing CARES funding, we were able to get our new ambulance, once it shows up, to have what's called a power load cot system. And the big thing, Chris and I talked with Walt quite a bit about this item when we were doing budget prep, is our current ambulance has a cot. And when we say cot, it's the bed that rolls in and out of the ambulance. But it's a 100% manual lift cot, so it's not powerized at all. It takes just strength to lift it. There's multiple reasons why I think we should get our current ambulance modified to be the same as the new ambulance. One is that the equipment is the same, so it doesn't matter if our crews are running the reserve ambulance that we currently have or the new one. Loading the patient in and out will be the same. The power cot system will potentially save us thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars in potential back injuries and workman comp claims, because there is no manual lifting of the cot. They push a button and it's a motorized system that raises it.
Mandatory deadlift training.
Exactly. Well, Chris experimented a great deal of training with our current cot. It's just so much safer for the patient, though, also, because with our current system, again, and this unfortunately has happened in the past, where if somebody doesn't recognize it's a manual cot and they think it's a powerized one and they hit that button and they're not holding it, it will just fall and fall with gravity. So if you have a person on there, that is a 4 to 5 foot fall, which now we just injured that person more than what they were prior to us getting there. And then the power load system is exactly the same as the cot hooks to the back of the ambulance, and essentially you hit a button and the load system pulls the cot inside and loads it into the ambulance. And same with unloading it, we hit a button and it rolls it out and lowers the legs for us. So it's expensive, undoubtedly, if you look at the line item. But for $45,000, that could save us, again, hundreds of thousands in potential injury to our people and to our patients. And the final one is the LifePak monitor. So again, through utilizing CARES funding, we were able to purchase two LifePak monitors, and what I'm asking for is a third. So all three of our fire stations have a LifePak 15 monitor. And what that is essentially it's a computer that does multiple functions on scene of an EMS call. It takes blood pressures, pulse oximetry, It can act as an AED, and it is, and you could take a 4-lead, 12-lead, and not only take them, but transmit them to the hospital. So when we get into our transporting program, if that's something that our medical director would like to see us doing, we have the capabilities of doing that. So that is just purchasing a third of the two that we already have. So that is capital replacement in a nutshell for this year.
Board discussion.
So just to add to that in terms of its financial impact, the board already approved the first command vehicle, chainsaws, extrication, and the high side shed. So the additional amount from preliminary would be about $207,000 added to it, resulting in a total of $334,000 capital expenditure budgets or budgeted for this year.
Board discussion?
Well, in terms of need, I'm kind of like, Ken, when you first get on, you start looking at these things, you look at these numbers and think, boy, that stuff's expensive. And then what do you have for alternatives? And then what do you do for risk management?
We're in an expensive
farmer.
You
can't go with the farmer solution. I can go get an old ram and build a lift and all that stuff. Yeah, probably wouldn't be acceptable. It's just an expensive business, and to do it in a manner that meets the standards of service, it's an expensive business to be in.
Let's have a motion to approve the purchase new capital items.
Yeah, I'll make a motion to approve the additional items as specified.
Second.
Any public comment on the motion on the table? Any more board discussion on the motion? Okay.
Walt?
Aye.
Ken?
Yes.
Justin?
Yes.
Pete?
Yes. Final budget then, Walt. That's where we're rolling into?
Capital reserve.
Capital reserve allocation.
Yep. And so, we can flip over to that. So,
this is all in your packets if you want to follow along on paper.
In order to meet the amount, the threshold that the county requires with regard to unallocated cash reserves, we have a good situation that we're faced with, and that's that we do have some monies that we can allocate towards our capital reserve accounts. And so what we did, let's see on the so if you look at our ending balance here, this is what we currently have in our account. It's a little over $1 million between the three capital reserve accounts, and allocated according to these three lines. And to meet the threshold, we have to have a total of $1,873,000, a little over that, in capital reserves to not have too much money in just
slushing around.
And so the current capital reserves, taken away from that 1.8 million, we have about $856,623.10 that we need to allocate towards our various capital reserve accounts. And I know there's some discussion. I know you guys had a discussion last month about the Ray station and so on, and living there. And so I know they're competing needs. I know we have some big items coming up with regard to apparatus replacement with the twins. And so there are going to be two engines that have to be replaced in fairly quick succession.
Yeah, so we're showing next year and the following year replacing an engine each year. And each one of those engines comes in roughly at $650,000.
And we also want to maintain some monies in our third account too, the building replacement account. So I guess I don't know that I have a strong recommendation. I'd say the preponderance of the monies that we allocate to those three accounts should go to apparatus, the largest portion. In terms of the specific nominal amount, I don't know that I have a, you know, I'm open to discussion there in terms of the specific amounts that should be allocated between those three accounts.
Yeah, and just for people who are following along at home, we're now looking at lines 21 through 23 on the spreadsheet, and you're recommending $100,000 be allocated in both capital improvement and building replacement, and capital apparatus is 656,623.
Correct. That's just an initial point for discussion.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I, to me, that's just a starting point.
Yeah. So a couple thoughts on that. We did have a very good discussion last month after touring the Ray House, there was conversation at the time about accelerating our station replacement plans over there, and doing that in a phased approach such that we would build a residence unit first that would be architecturally designed and engineered so it would be totally compatible with the equipment bays that we would eventually add to it, just given the condition of the Ray House and our desire to attract and retain volunteers in a very expensive housing market. That's clearly a big leverage point that we have, is having nice places for people to live in exchange for serving our residents. That's as far as that conversation got. I've talked with several of you. There's of course there is in all human endeavors, a wide opinion about the sufficiency of that house. Younger people have a higher tolerance for living in conditions that house demonstrates than some of us who are a little bit older. And it's worked for a very long time. So it's not something that's on fire, but it's totally on me for not having been over to that house more frequently to see it. That's the first time I've ever been in there. It was a little bit shocking to me that we have people in those sorts of conditions. So we have been putting plenty of money away, and we will have this as a formal agenda item on the next meeting, but we could start doing things like hiring an architect to help us with that planning process, the design of plans, taking the sourdough building plans that we still have in a file cabinet somewhere, I'm sure, using those as a template to sort of get a sense of what we're talking about. I noticed today in the paper that MSU is $18 million over budget on that student wellness center. And that's just a function of the times we're in. It's just more expensive. So rushing into a big capital project right now is probably not something we want to do. But getting an idea about what that might look like is something we could do. I suppose we could also talk to the chief about getting another couple of years on those engines. You know, right, as a way to sort of move all this stuff around with minimum hit to the taxpayers. Walt and I spoke today or yesterday about how it'd be really nice if we could do the construction of a residence unit without a mill levy, mm-hmm. right, out of our capital funds. And I'm just not sure that's possible. You know, we don't have enough data at this point. So those were some of the things that were rolling around at the last board meeting. I don't think that there's any doubt that we should put all this money into the capital accounts. And remember, these capital accounts are totally fungible. We put money in one, we can move it at the next board meeting to another. We're not locking ourselves in, and we've just been acting on what Walt's recommendations, which seem totally reasonable. So if Brian said, oh no, I gotta have a new engine replaced next year, then we could slant a little bit more money into that apparatus fund if we wanted to have some more left over for building kind of stuff. So that's sort of the lay of the land, and I don't have any strong opinions. I'm totally willing to entertain the notion from everybody in this room that Ray House can we can get through three or four more years on that. We still have a bond to pay off, mm-hmm. and all that sort of stuff. But given the growth that's going on in our district and our entire operating model, which benefits the taxpayers through the use of volunteers rather than full-time paid staff, I just sort of like to start exploring it sooner rather than later.
And just to throw another component into the discussion too, in terms of the thought process, the last payment on our current bond occurs in 2028. And so, you know, it would be nice to be able to transition. I don't know that that's a reality. We may have to act more quickly than that with regard to getting something done over at Gray. But, you know, from a palatability standpoint, a marketing standpoint, it'd be nice to be able to segue into that. But I know when Bridget made her presentation, she also mentioned that there'd be the possibility of, you know, some financing methods that would kind of smooth that out a little bit too. Mm-hmm. I don't recall the exact details, yeah. But when I mentioned that to her,
yeah. It would seem to me a sort of a logical sequence would be to get some kind of idea about the overall cost for a new station, mm-hmm. and the feasibility of doing that modular phased approach that we talked about. So a residence hall first, and then the facilities bay later. Just getting some numbers on that. This year for construction is going to be one of those aberrations, we hope, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, looking in, right, one data point that's way off the line there. So we hope going forward those prices are going to come down a little bit, and then the bids will be more competitive.
Yeah, and I think that is, I mean, I guess that speaks to using some of those monies for that concept architectural work. And obviously, you know, we wouldn't be at a point where we could probably come up with a budget for construction or anything that we could use long term, but at least have something that we can work with for presentation purposes to constituents and yeah. that sort of thing.
And then that would inform a conversation. We could have Bridget back here if she'd mm-hmm. be nice enough to come, and she could run us through, knowing what the numbers sort of roughly look like, ballpark, how we might try to smooth that.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I guess I'm in line with that thought process that maybe we should spend some of our capital improvement dollars, and I don't know in today's world what that costs to have an architect do that, but to look at some concept drawings and then maybe consider having them work on some more detailed drawings. But I think, you know, we had a little bit of that discussion at our budget meeting, you know, kind of thinking about the pluses and minuses of this station and the layout of the residence component, you know, the other side of the building versus this side of the building, and given the orientation that exists. And so, you know, those are maybe some parts of that discussion and for the concept component that could be, you know, these guys could be brought into that with mm-hmm. whoever we get for an architect. And I don't know for concept work, if we're looking at an RFP type situation, probably, I suppose, because it obviously is a very significant project. Mm-hmm. And hopefully whoever does the concept work for us, even if it's a couple of years down the road that we actually pull the trigger on construction of a building, that they're the firm that would generate the drawings for us, the construction drawings.
Justin, Ken, you guys got thoughts, opinions?
No, I'm kind of for that, having it come in a couple phases. The orientation of that lot and everything doesn't lend itself to sourdough in terms of the way that buildings on there, but yeah. I mean, you know, a guy could lay it out pretty easily, I think. And
well, one thing I did when we purchased that lot, it was before the consolidation, and Ray purchased the lot. One thing we did look at, or two things that we did, we had a geotech perform work on the site to make sure that it's all buildable and everything checked out okay there. We probably have to raise up the grade a little bit. But the other thing we did check, the footprint of this building, actually, believe it or not, when you look at the lot, it doesn't look like it, but when you actually put the measurements, you can overlay this building on that site and still allow enough for a drive-through between the old building and a new building and a loop around it.
Wow.
There is actually enough room to site this building there.
But yeah, it's hard to
not
tell.
Not saying that this building needs to be, but just to give you an idea.
It's hard to tell because the lot, you know, is shallower, but I didn't know how far back it really went. I couldn't tell when we were there. Yeah. Heard there's a bunch of ducks back there, but that's, you know, I don't know where they were at.
Yeah, there is some water, and that's where the ground would have to be, elevation would have to be brought up a little bit to the building. But the geotech said it's fine underneath.
Okay. What do you think?
I don't know, we talked about spending a little bit of money there, but what's, you know, the back deck, or I mean, it just depends on how long we want to be in it, because the back deck doesn't work. We talked about putting in a mini split so they had some nice heating and air conditioning. You know, it's just whether or not, is this a couple years, we or a year, or do we want to put any band-aids on it, or?
Yeah, I think a couple things. One, if the chief said, we got to have a new deck, I mean, it's just a safety hazard. Okay, we put a new deck on it. I think that imagining an RFP process, which would take some months, selecting an architect, that internal consulting that has to go on will take another couple of months. So we're looking at, let's just call it 6 months, be generous, maybe 8 months, yeah, before we have an idea of what we're looking at. I mean, it may be the architect, like, there's no way you want to do this in phases. It's going to cost you twice as much. You know, we just don't have enough. I don't feel like I have enough information.
Right.
So let's say we're a year out, you know, how do you feel about that Ray House? I mean, every dollar we put in there is a dollar less we have to put into architecture work. And, you know, my personal opinion would be that house is not worth a whole lot more money, except for life safety stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, I mean, the guys that live there, and again, it's like you mentioned, Pete, like the age, you're willing to accept less, I guess, if you want to call it that. But they certainly don't necessarily complain about, you know, the conditions they're living in. You know, that my concerns would be as trying to stretch capital replacement, is we'd kind of start into the, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul. That, you know, not replacing trucks that are 20 years old,
yeah,
are really going to start to take a hit in our maintenance
budget. And those are difficult trucks anyway.
And they're difficult trucks, and they're just showing they've had 20 years of service in the fire service. And so that would be my concern of that, is trying to stretch capital items further to cover that project. And again, I'd be kind of in the same boat as Pete as far as, like, you know, what's it actually going to cost to put the resident facility up first, and can our current, you know, funds even support that? You know, I think it's a great idea to start the discussion and even going down the road of RFP, selecting an architect and getting something drawn on paper as far as what we're...
And let me just test an assumption that we have as a board, that having a clean, modern facility like this is useful in attracting and retaining volunteers.
It is, yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's the first thing. That's the motivating force for this, is to keep this model that we've got going and give you more tools to do that.
Yeah.
So I think we do need an RFP for this, and we don't need to make a decision tonight other than that let's make a decision for you guys to start to think about what an RFP looks like.
Sure.
And then we can maybe review that at the next board meeting,
yeah,
and then decide whether or not to fly it. Does that sound?
I would suggest, yeah, putting it on as a D&D.
Yeah, minutes, right.
So that we can, in case we do want to take some action on something.
Anything else on that? That sounds like a reasonable plan. I don't think we need a motion for that. Just direction,
yeah,
to staff.
Yeah.
Are we done with the budget, Walt? Is there anything else you want to?
Well, I think the only thing is we do need to have a motion to approve the budget, and so that's the capital component. And so if we did allocate, I'm not well versed enough to know what a commercial building, you know, just to get concept drawings and that sort of thing, what that cost structure looks like once we throw that out. So if we throw 100 $1,000 into capital improvement, we would end up with an ending balance of a little over 350,000. And I would think that would more than, I would think, so. Yeah, there'd be some money left over, I would think. I mean, I would think that $70,000-$80,000 goes a long ways here. So I would think that that allocation should be workable. The capital, the building replacement side of things, we have about a little over $222,000 in there. And so, I don't know, Brian, do you feel as though for building replacement, is that adequate funding for that capital reserve account, or would you shift some monies, more monies into that? Or
I would leave it at what we have listed there. I mean, for building replacement, I mean, that's what we're talking about.
Like if you have a roof that has to be replaced, or...
Or the deck, right?
Right.
Yeah, that kind of thing, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but I think the amount we have listed there is going to be adequate.
Yeah. And again, I'm not opposed if you say we should replace this deck because it improves the quality of life of the people living there. Just put a wood deck in on a Drex deck.
Yeah, sure.
Because we're going to rip it down. I'm not opposed to that.
Yeah, fur deck, yeah. So if we did that, we'd be able to put 656,000 just north of that into the apparatus account, which would result in about $1.3 million in our apparatus account.
So
that's before the $334,000 expenditure. So we drop that down
by 300,000.
Right, a little over 300,000. So, in terms of what it would look like next year, going in and melting into.
So just thinking about your big ticket items, we would have enough in our capital apparatus fund to fund a new engine next year. And then hopefully we'd be able to fill that bucket again.
Right. We're not going to be able to fill the bucket at this level.
At this level. Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. But we'd be close between all our funds, I guess is what I'm saying, to pay cash, so to speak, for two engine replacements in 22 and 23.
Right. Right.
That's a pretty nice position to be in.
Yeah, it's a good position to be in. Yeah. And it is. I mean, we certainly should visit the capital replacement plan again, because there is stuff just rolling over. Like, we're definitely stretching the age of non-primary use apparatus. Our support truck is band-aided together. And again, that's only just our rehab support truck, so we kind of see it as somewhat as a non-essential emergent vehicle.
Not to mention the Green Suburban.
I do have to retract when I said that we have to deduct. We are already deducting, so the 1.3 is rolling forward.
Oh, great. Okay, yeah. Good. So that's even a better position. Yeah.
That's
okay.
A better
great.
Position. Yeah. No, that was my bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, and that's the thing is, yeah. I mean, that is funds to, you know, replace two of our engines, which are our frontline apparatus vehicles besides our command vehicles. You know, our reserve water tender, we're still making use of the 1985
milk truck,
essentially, yeah.
So are there other bigger items in the next year, couple of years, besides those two engines? I don't recall the capital replacement plan right off the top of my head.
I mean, it's just those items that are being rolled over every year. That old water tender, the support truck. And I would like to look into, like, technically our reserve ambulance. We know we just moved it from primary to reserve, but there is some opportunity also with grants to try to utilize some state and federal money to help with some of that.
That's what we talked about. Yeah, if you guys can look into that.
Yeah. But the big items would be, you know, that old water tender just keeps getting moved year to year. That support truck just moves year to year. It's just those couple items. You know, we've definitely checked off some pretty big boxes in the last few years, the radios, the SCBAs, yeah, so.
Yeah.
Okay, any more board discussion? I think we're gonna have a motion to accept the allocation of funds into the three capital reserve accounts as presented.
Yep, is that your?
That's my motion.
I'll second it.
Any public comment on the motion on the table? Any more board discussion on the motion?
Walt?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Justin?
Yes.
Pete?
Yes. Okay. The MFTA Fire Trustees Meetings and Dues.
Well, we do have to do, we haven't approved officially the final budget.
Okay.
We did the capital.
Sorry?
So we've pretty much gone over all of the details in that with the discussion on Max Mills and with the capital reserve distribution, and obviously one of the more significant, other significant changes that occurred between preliminary and final was changes on in personnel services because of the new position and so on that the board approved. And so that jumped up our expenditures with regard to personnel services. So that's it in terms of new things that occurred between preliminary and final. And so I think we've discussed all of those. I don't know if anybody needs a recap, but I think we're in pretty good shape with regard to the final budget.
Do you want a motion to approve the final budget?
I'll make a motion to approve the final budget as presented.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any public comment on the motion on the table? Any more board discussion on the motion on the table? Okay, Cheryl.
Walt?
Yes.
Ken?
Yes.
Justin?
Yes.
Pete?
Yes. Okay, Ken, this is really primarily for you, the next item. We have re-signed our dues to the MFTA, which is the Montana Fire Trustees Association, and they have a conference in Butte, October 1 to 3. Several of board members have gone over the years. I've been, but not in a very long time. And if it's useful to you, we have a reimbursement policy, so you're not paying expenses out of pocket. And if it works for you and you'd like to go, you're welcome to. And as is any other board member, we have a travel budget, so we can afford to send everybody easily to that. And so that's just FYI. And they have a website?
Yes.
Right, so you can poke around and see what you think.
Okay. What's the date of it?
October 1,
1 to 3.
3.
1 to 3.
Oh, yeah, in Butte.
Okay.
Any more board discussion on that one? Any public comment on that? Okay, Fire Chief's report. All right.
So you'll notice in the Chief's report, I did include the past 3 years, as we talked about last meeting, as far as call numbers from where we have been at August 1st, the past 3 years, to where we are at this year. So you can see roughly in 2 years, we've added 100 calls to our call volume, which for us is significant when we're only in the past have been running roughly 500 a year. No real changes to our roster. Residency programs are again still full. Training is really unchanged. We're open burning is still closed, but obviously Gallatin County is still under a full burn ban that was signed, the emergency ordinance by the county commissioners. So that really over impacts that. Chris has obviously started, so Malcolm Malone, our training officer's first day is actually tomorrow, so we can have him come in September so you guys can meet him. I went out for 6 days with the county assist team, managed the Sloughgrass fire outside of Coal Strip. We had Point Dexter Audio come in to do a sound test of this room to try to help with some of the acoustics in it, but we've started to run into issues with communications with that company as far as they came out. We haven't paid them anything, so they came out, did the sound test, and they were supposed to give us recommendations of what we could do to mitigate it, and now all of a sudden we just can't seem to communicate with them. So we may be just going to another company at this point since we haven't changed money or anything with that company. The solar project, as I mentioned a little bit less, so it's completed. Panels are on the roof. The inverters are running. We probably will, I'm guessing, see our first impact of that hopefully next month with our billing statement. As far as it's a fully monitored system, so the company that installed it monitors it to make sure it's operating correctly. The good thing about that is if there's a problem with it, they're going to know it way before we're actually going to know it. And they'll actually let us know that, hey, something is wrong with your system and it needs to be addressed. There is a way we can monitor it as far as what the kilowatts are putting out. And Colin has that information. It just requires an email address to get signed up. And if anybody's interested in that, we can certainly.
Did we have Northwestern Energy come out and put a net meter in?
Yes. Yeah. So it's net metering now.
Okay.
Yeah, since it went online.
Just be curious to look at our energy bill and see where that goes for the next.
Yeah.
You know, for a year, let's take a look at it.
Right.
If you could report to us on that, that'd be kind of interesting.
Yep. So the company, the active monitoring that they're performing, how long will they do that? Is there a time horizon that they quit doing active monitoring, or is that something that we pay for in perpetuity, or what's the story there?
I don't actually know if there's an end date to that. From what Colin had gotten from the company, is it did not sound like there's an end date, but we'll certainly look into that. Mm-hmm. if that lasts for so long, or if it some sort of turns into some sort of subscription or something.
Right.
We have to pay for.
I'm kind of curious. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll look into that.
Wouldn't be a bad idea. You know, that was one of the problems with that system over at Cottonwood, is it really wasn't monitored when the batteries went bad. You know, nobody really knew what it was performing or how it was performing.
Yep, we will look into that. So that's up and running. I mentioned it last month, but we did get the reimbursement from Northwestern Energy on that, so the grant came through and paid for it. If any of you guys went to the Sweet Pea Parade, you probably saw our truck. So the guys did participate in that on August 7th. I didn't really include anything. There's no, unfortunately, updates on our ambulance. It's still an unknown. So I just talked with Avgar Ambulances recently, and you know, we kind of had a date of August. The end of August is maybe, and now it's maybe the end of the calendar year. And we are just stuck with our Ford chassis and them not being able to get a Ford Transit van to build the ambulance on. It's holding up the entire project. So as I will get updates, I will provide them to you.
But was it a victim of the chip?
It is a victim of the semi, semiconductor chip issue. But going forward, I would like to start to and give you guys more information as we're moving forward on just developing our ambulance transport program. And so when that unit does get here, Chris and I have talked a lot about our training needs that we need to address to get our people up to that. So I will start running a monthly kind of update of where we are.
Steve White spreadsheet, don't forget.
Exactly, yep. Other than that, the only thing I've recently found about, I didn't get it in my trees report, is our truck we got from the DOD program may not end up working out quite as we hoped it would.
That was that half-bed we saw at Cottonwood?
That is, yeah. So we sent it into Diesel Pros for them to go through it. And it has got some wear and tear in showing that it sat on a military base. And essentially, it needs an entire new fuel system. Which could be on the low end of $8,000 and the upper end of $12,000. So
injectors and pump.
Injectors and pump, yeah. That's basically the
salt air corrosion or salt corrosion or something like that.
Yeah, and you know, that generation of diesel with that EGR system, you know, it needed to run down the road, and I don't think it ever ran down the road. It sat on a military base and drove around. So it did a number on the engine. So we're not into it that much. We're basically into it, the transport cost of hauling it here. It still runs, and we're just gonna run it till it dies, and we'll see. It could be.
Old tornado might be a dust devil.
Old tornado.
He's still breathing at this point. No idea. But I mean, we got the plow for it. We'll plow with it until it has some mechanical issue, and then just write it off again. It was a DOD release program deal, so. That's what it is.
Sometimes the free gift horse isn't so free.
Exactly, yeah. It's a gamble, as anything is. No significant breakdowns or injuries in the last month. We're still rolling along. We will be at Catapalooza on Monday when those college students come back. We have an incredible interest in our fire department right now, which is not a bad thing, but we have not even done Catapalooza, and we are sitting on 20 applications of a potential 6 recruit class.
Pretty good quality applicants, too, it looks like.
Well, we still got to shift through that, but at least it's people that, you know, are following back up to say, have you looked at my application, that kind of stuff. So there's some follow-up interest. But, I mean, I don't think we've ever had this, where we've had this amount of applications online prior to our biggest recruitment event of the year. So it's good. But that class will be beginning in September. Mac is going to get a full plate tomorrow. So yeah.
Jump right into the fire.
Exactly. That's what we hired him for.
Board questions of the chief. Any public comment on the chief's report? Okay, I think we covered trustee activities, announcements. Next board meeting would be the 21st of September. How's that look for everybody?
Peach.
Good. All right, anybody have anything else?
Another announcement, make sure I get the date right. September 25th is we are planning the pancake breakfast.
September 25th.
My birthday.
Is it really? Just for you. We will make you a birthday pancake.
I'll probably be out of town.
42.
All right, we're adjourned. Thanks, everybody.